The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to it, weekend editions here. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Damon Barr, Mark Kranak. And you, hope you're doing all right. Today, the 40th anniversary, the Miracle on Ice, 1980 Winter Olympics. I was two. It's okay. It's all right. It's still a moment of great pride and nationalism, and I'm not a huge hockey guy, but I smile every time I see that highlight. Plenty to get into. We'll talk about some of your greatest moments as a sports fan. Get into that this morning. Can join us, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Give us a find on Twitter, Chris Schmidt, at Schmidt underscore radio, at Damon Barr, that's two R's for Damon, and at Mark Skurs for Mr. Mark Kranak. You can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. Get all your sports needs, Nebraska and otherwise, with ESPN Lincoln's Twitter handle. And yes, at HailVarsity. Loaded up, we'll spend some time with the college football power rankings. And that's been a topic of discussion. Brandon Vogel's been all over it this week. We'll hear from Vogues in an hour. Our rewind with Brad Edwards of ESPN in about 25 minutes. The Iron Horse is Gary Sharp. Sharpie will be with us around 8:30. So, a lot to get into with Nebraska. Football still a bit a ways off, but Nebraska baseball front and center. And, man, just a tough one last night. They didn't get started till about 8 last night down in San Diego. And this is a tough pattern. I don't know that it's going to be a season-long problem, but it's been an issue for Nebraska baseball. An issue may be too strong a word. But you look at the end of the Baylor series, where you were up in the final game of that three-game set, 2-0, you lose 7-2. You're battling back the second game of the Baylor series, take a lead, can't hold a lead. And last night, Nebraska unable to hang on against San Diego. 7-0 was Nebraska's explosion out of the dugout, and they fall 12-11 in game one of the Tony Gwynn Legacy Tournament. Couple of errors hurt Nebraska. Middle part of the innings, a bomb by San Diego got things rolling. Nebraska responded with some runs, but ultimately not enough. Garrett Stroh was able to go 5 innings, relieved by Max Schreiber in the bottom of the 6th. Tyler Martin came in, and then Shea Shaneman closed the night out for the Nebraska Cornhusker pitching staff. So Schreiber, Martin, and Shaneman couldn't hold the lead for Stroh. So Nebraska was fantastic offensively. The Big Red compiled, again, another massive outing. Nebraska will turn their attention and try and get things rolling against San Diego State today. San Diego State rolls in at 4-1, but the immediate issue to discuss is Nebraska's bullpen woes. The Huskers compiled 18 hits. Again, a monster number of guys getting on base. 12 runs is enough to win any ball game, any time. Nebraska left 11 runners on. Cam Chick went 4-for-5. And it just couldn't hold for Nebraska. So let's look at the bullpen here and try and examine where Nebraska can go. First and foremost, you got to flush it. You got to flush it if you're Nebraska. And the seventh inning is what you highlight from last evening. Schreiber had a walk and a throwing error at first base. And this isn't like Lance Pinata Schreiber. I'm just kind of reporting how it went last night. The Torrio sent double down the right field line. That play to the run. You had the Torrio's bats kind of there was no emergency fix, right? There was no shutting them down. Another single up the middle that scored a second run. And then you had another fielding error by Nebraska. So you had a couple of errors that opened that door, compiled with some hits. Things got tied after you were up 7-0. It was, you blink and it's 9-9 heading into the bottom of the eighth inning. Nebraska, again, out hitting San Diego 18-10, but the defense, an issue. The Nebraska bullpen allowing 10 earned runs on the night. This is Will Bolt after the game, a quote, "Nobody's going to feel sorry for us. We've got to come out and execute pitches at a high level." He said it. We need to flush this one. It's going to hurt for the rest of the night. We've got to come out tomorrow and be more focused defensively and on the mound. Couldn't say it better myself. We'll see if Nebraska can move forward. And you wonder if some of these early season doses of bad medicine with holding leads is going to be lessons in mental toughness and adjustment and buckling down, or if it's going to be an adventure to project long-term for Nebraska the rest of the season, if it's going to be in the back of the mind bullpen-wise. So we do not have any audio from Will Bolt last night, but part of what he said going into this series sticks true. And there are different games, and momentum's a different thing in baseball. And it's true. Maybe you played. Maybe it's happened to you. I've talked to Junior about it, about if you mess up and you make an error, the ball will find you again. It will test you. It will wear you out mentally on the diamond if you're not ready to redeem yourself. But here's Will Bolt about the different types of scenarios you see on the diamond.
Yeah, we saw three totally different types of games, and we saw a game where we got up early and finished it off. We saw a game where we got to come back and didn't finish it off, and then a game where we got the lead early and, you know, didn't capitalize to kind of expand the lead. So we saw a lot of different situations for our guys this weekend, and there's a lot of positives to take from it.
Well, lessons learned again, and you don't need too many of those lessons to try and make an adjustment. And this one was a lot like that first game for Nebraska, with the exception of finishing it off. And Nebraska jumped out huge and couldn't hang on. They were able to respond, so there was a bit of a comeback when they lost the lead. But it comes down to execution. From a roles standpoint, you know, you have the non-conference, you have the first 15 games of the season on the road for Nebraska baseball, and you'll eventually get to come home, but that'll build some character, that'll build some mental toughness, and it will prepare you for the rest of the year, but it's got to start happening now. Nebraska, nothing lost early in the year. You take these and you learn from them and you build from them, but do you come out today sluggish and hungover because you let one get away? Does it linger? Or are you able to flush it? And we'll see what some of the roles are. I mean, you're getting a look-see at who you can rely on, who you can trust, and what's your level of patience with who you're going to. How long of a leash do you have? And I think you need a longer leash, and clearly you're only into game four of the season, so it's not time for drastic reactions, but you do have to have a period where you let guys work through some things to stabilize. That sense, though, you can also maybe try somebody new. And I'm not advocating that happens yet with a bullpen standpoint, but here's Will Bolt on the roles here for this baseball team.
I think there's always fluidity. I think we kind of saw some things that, you know, with some guys that maybe we won't do again, you know, like just had some guys get off the field and have a good inning and then try to send them back out and, you know, it didn't go as well. So, you know, until you actually see the live action, you don't really know how guys are going to respond. So, yeah, there'll be, it's always fluid.
That's Will Bolt. Some of his comments post Baylor, but it applies to last night. 1-for-3. One and three and 12-1 loss to San Diego. We'll check in with Mark Kranak, get his take on some of Nebraska baseball's woes. Gary Sharp will check in. Let's check in with that 40th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice and sports moments. 466-377-6800. 825-5865. Where's that rank for you? Maybe some of you remember watching it live, Al Michaels' legendary call. It was the embodiment of sticking it to communism. That was awesome. The movie. Who doesn't love the movie with Kurt Russell? And when I apply it to different sports growing up, I mean, there's a lot of like flashbulb moments. And when you say the greatest, that's a tough argument to beat because of what it meant for the United States, who you beat, how you beat them. You had this band of grown men with families and jobs, probably with the KGB, on the ice where they don't lose ever. It's their job or suffer the consequences. And you had a bunch of young pups, American kids go out and get it handled. The only thing I've seen in person from a moment, and you can't compare, I mean, as cool as watching national championships are for Nebraska football, and it's your state, and it's your team, and it's kind of your birthright as a Nebraska fan to bleed for the Big Red. It's a whole different level with the United States and the Olympics and what it means. And those were all amateurs for the United States. Not so sure about Mother Russia at the time with the lineup and the loaded squad they had. But I got to go back to the Fiesta Bowl with Frazier's run. And the moment that you see on film we put out on Twitter where the clock is winding down and you hear Michaels call 5 seconds left, 4 seconds left, 3 seconds left. Do you believe in miracles? Yes. Incredible call. But I remember pretty vividly sitting with my brother, and it was a really awesome family experience. We were down at the Fiesta Bowl where Nebraska dismantled Florida. LP went off. Frazier had a great game. The defense was incredible. The high-stepping Christian Peter should have been 2-point conversion, fumble return. I mean, all of that. And Nebraska just annihilated the really good Florida team. But I'm sitting with my brother, and that was what we did as a family. We'd go on holiday trips, and that turned into, all right, we're going to the Fiesta Bowl or we're going to T.O.'s last game in the 98 Orange Bowl against Peyton Manning. But, you know, back to the Fiesta Bowl, and you're sitting there, and Nebraska explodes for like 29 points in the second quarter, and you're like, man, this is a really great football team we've gotten to watch all season long, but none of us expected this type of scoring explosion in the second quarter. And then you kind of fast forward to the end of the third quarter where you have the iconic image of Jim Nance and then Pavelka's call on the radio where Frazier breaks, you know, first and second team tackles of, it seemed like there was 22 Florida defenders on the field, not just 11, that all had a shot at Frazier. And he breaks the tackles, he goes 75 yards, and he looks back, and it's just him alone in the end zone. And it was a magnificent exclamation point to an insanely game-changing and program-changing career. And that's the moment I'll remember, because I'm sitting there. We had a bunch of Florida fans that were yapping in front of us, and they were on their hands after that second quarter. We're standing up to watch Frazier blow by us. We weren't on the field. We weren't in you need an oxygen tank to see the game. We weren't high up. We weren't low down. We were perfect in the middle, sitting there at the Fiesta Bowl, and you see Frazier, the far sideline, blow by. Or I should say it was the near sideline, where you see him on that boundary continue to run through people and then accelerate down the field and then turn. And the only thing he didn't do was wave goodbye, because he could have, as he switched the ball to the outside arm out of, you know, towards the pylon. But that's my moment. And you know, it's apples and oranges. It's a championship moment, and it wasn't quite a championship, but it got the U.S. to the championship in the gold medal game. But that's in person. That's where I was going to say that's my greatest sports moment that I got to see in person. And it was Frazier, his run against Florida. Take your thoughts. There's been a lot of things you can draw on for Nebraska. Some of you may think, you know, Alex Henry's bomb against Colorado was pretty good. Some of you were down at the Big 12 championship game with, I mean, there's a lot of Sioux moments against Texas. Damon, is there a sports moment that jogs your memory?
I was going to say that Alex Henry bomb.
You know where you were in the stadium?
I wasn't at the game. I never went to a lot of games like that were important. As a kid, I'd always go to the non-conference games. So not really anything in stadium, remember, but I can remember where I was, like, exactly at that moment when he made that kick, and I was like, yeah, I guess I like football.
Tell me, where were you?
I was at my friend AJ's house. We would always go over there for the games. We were in his basement, and I remember we were just freaking out about this game, and I was, what was this, 2008? I was, like, 10, 2008,
Henry's kick was 08.
08, yeah. I was, like, 10 years old. I didn't really know much about football, and after that game, I was like, well, I guess I like football now. Time to start thinking about this a lot.
Yeah, that was cool. And Memorial Stadium shaking like it did was pretty impressive. So sports memories, what's that sports moment? Miracle on Ice, the 40th anniversary today. Al Michaels, the United States defeating Russia. Incredible. Do you have a Nebraska sports moment? Husker baseball, we'll see if they can regroup. Husker hoops off this weekend. What has been going on is an incredible showcase on the hardwood with a number of talented prep players. You have Salas and the crew up at Millard North. Omaha Central, a monster overtime win last night there. I had a chance to see Westside last night, and Westside is so, so good. They are gifted shooters. Jaden Booth's a UNO kid that is, God, he's so polished. Nagambi, really impressed with Westside. There's going to be some teams left out of State 2020 down at PBA that are really, really talented because of how loaded the Class A slate is. And we'll get into a little high school ball. We'll talk with Sharpie about that. Brandon Vogel, more on the FPI as we get closer to spring football. And excited to explore that with Brad Edwards. He's been doing FPI for a number of years, and he breaks it down here in the Rewind in a moment. Want to remind you about buckling up. It's a real simple question. Seatbelt or windshield? Seatbelts prevent excessive injury when your vehicle and your body need to slow down in a hurry. That applies to whether you're in the driver's seat, the passenger seat, or backseat. Buckle up now. Click it or ticket. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Damon Barr is in. Chris Schmidt. Mark Kranak. Hail Varsity Weekend continues. Brad Edwards up next.
Now back with Hail Varsity Radio. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery. With Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
Welcome in with ESPN College Game Day. ESPN Insider. And part of the data and stats and research that goes on with ESPN and FPI. We say hi back to Brad Edwards at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Brad, you guys have done it again, man. We're buzzing about Nebraska FPI. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. I'm trying to think where the show was on Monday. I was on a show. It might have been somewhere in Alabama. And the host made a comment about, well, he said, I know of nothing else. You guys got Nebraska fans really excited. So
depends on what Nebraska fan you talk to, because the backlash is no. No credit, no hype. Stay away from that vanity mirror. Let's earn it on the field, because Nebraska fans, Brad, they are hurt, my friend. They are hurt that there's expectations again.
Yeah, I get that. You know, you want to fly under the radar, and I'm not sure if this would make them feel good or not, but last year, one of the teams that was a pretty big riser from the end of 2018 to the preseason 2019 rankings, and then a lot of their fans did get excited, was Tennessee. And they started very poorly, you may remember, last year, and people were like, what was FPI thinking? What? They turned out to, you know, to be a pretty solid team when it was all said and done, but it was a really rough start, so I don't know if Nebraska fans would take that right now, but that's what happened a year ago with one of the teams that FPI was a lot bigger on than the general public.
Brad Edwards with us from ESPN Radio, ESPN Game Day, and of course part of the research department with ESPN and FPI. Brad, let's just give folks a look-see, and you and I talked this time of year about FPI, because the last 2 years Nebraska has been a mover and shaker. Their ranking or hype didn't really match where they came in on FPI. They were one of those it teams a year ago, because it's supposed to be that Frost year two jump, and the win total and win projection and win percentages did not match up with where they are at this year. Folks are freaking out about the schedule and the close to 2020. Nebraska could be a better team. You just it could be touch and go with bowl eligibility again. Lay out for me and the listeners just your kind of association with FPI and what goes into the data, because this isn't opinion. This is numbers you guys have run.
Right. Yeah. So I work very closely with our analytics team, and they're the ones that put together FPI. And let me just start by giving you the inputs. This is what goes into it, and I don't think you'll find it too different from, you know, what you and your listeners talk about for most of the offseason when you're trying to analyze teams and who's going to be good and who won't be. Starts with, you know, how good have you been recently? And the previous season matters more than the season before that, which matters more than the season before that. But overall, it's looking at the previous 4 years. You know, obviously last year is important, but consistency over the previous years is important as well. You're more likely to trust a team that's been good for the last 4 years than you are one that just kind of came out of nowhere a year earlier. So that's that part of it. The next thing, very common, returning starters. Okay, so we look at both offense and defense, and we kind of rate the units separately. And there is a small special teams input, too, but most of it comes from offense and defense. And so you look at who's back. Well, I shouldn't say that. You look at how many are back. And on offense, if the quarterback is one of them, one of the returning starters, then that counts a little bit more than any other player on the team. And I would just kind of interject here that one of the things that we're working on right now in the off season that we might actually change in the next version of FPI that comes out, we've developed a better method, and we're kind of testing it right now, of gauging what's returning rather than using starters. It's just, for a long time, starters is really all you had to go off of. Now we have a lot of data that can give us a better idea of, you know, who played, not just who started, but among the guys who are coming back, how much did they play if they weren't starters? And even the ones who started, how much did they play? How good were they? That obviously is an important question to ask, too. So those are things that go in. Is the head coach back? FPI considers continuity a big deal if you look at teams across the board. So That would be something where if your head coach from the previous year is back, that helps as long as you weren't really bad the year before. And then the recruiting profile plays a small part in it. You know, the previous four classes, that would be part of FPI and what it's looking at. And then one other thing I'll throw in before you follow up is that what you see right now is not a prediction. This is basically a ranking of how good the teams are expected to be, totally independent of what your schedule is. The next version of FPI that comes out in April will then look at the schedules, not just how good you are, how good are the teams you play, where you play them, all that. And so, I mean, you can quite often find teams that FPI ranks in the top 25 and projects to be 7-5, 6-6 if their schedule is really tough. So, just because you're a top 25 team rating-wise by FPI, that doesn't in itself mean that FPI believes that you're going to finish in the top 25 of the polls when it's all said and done.
Thank you for that clarification, because this is phase one. Phase two will look at Nebraska's final five and Ohio State's two, Penn State's five, Wisconsin's six. You have Iowa in at 27, Minnesota's in at 20, and Nebraska gets Penn State and Minnesota at home. The rest of it is John Wayne time on the road, not to mention Luke Fickell and Cincy rolling to town and South Dakota State that scared the bejesus out of Minnesota a year ago. So the schedule's not easy. Nebraska fans are... I don't know that they're yet too cautiously optimistic, that side of things yet, but spring ball will get rolling here in a little bit, and there'll be some renewed energy and hype. I want to go back to the quarterback, and that's a question mark here. Adrian Martinez was not right. He was dinged. He had inconsistency at wide receiver, in my opinion. It took Nebraska's ground game to get going a little bit. The O-line needed to come together. All those things were real last year, and Adrian tried to tough it out, but he was a far cry from his freshman year. And the Big Ten is full of really brilliant minds, and they adjusted to him as well. And you didn't see a lot of downfield attempts, Brad. You didn't see a lot of running. You saw some, but you didn't see as much as you did freshman year from Adrian. And let's dive into that quarterback piece for Nebraska. Yes, you have a quarterback that's back, but when you look at quarterbacks around the country for teams that are poised and ready to make a jump, how do you view this sophomore season from Adrian as you look at Nebraska moving forward?
Yeah, so one of the things FPI does with that returning quarterback is it's assuming that if the quarterback is back, that the offense should be closer to what it was a year earlier than if he's not back. So just because the quarterback's back doesn't mean that FPI is assuming the offense will be good. It just assumes that it will be similar to what it was a year earlier. And off the top of my head, I don't even know what Nebraska's offense was rated at the end of last year and what it is right now in the preseason. But if it's not good, and I would think it wasn't great for Nebraska last year, then there is the opportunity. I mean, there's a high ceiling there. You know, there's a lot of room to grow, I guess, would be the way that I would say it. And, you know, given what Frost was able to do at UCF, and I'm sure at this point Nebraska fans are sick and tired of hearing UCF. You want to, you know, see it happen in Lincoln. It's not like you've got a coach who's never done it, you know, who's sure. Never had offenses that could bust a grape. So I just look forward to seeing what he's able to do, how they adjust, you know, how they improve. You know, if health is something that you think could make him a much better quarterback, then obviously that's a big part of this as well. And so, but I think there are going to be all sorts of fan bases around the country who are going to spend this offseason talking about Joe Burrow. And they're going to say, look what Joe Burrow was at LSU in 2018, and then look what he was in 2019. And if a guy can make that much improvement from one season to the next, why can't our guy? And those are incredibly rare leaps. I don't know if we've seen too many like that in college football history, guys going from what Joe Burrow was one year to the next. But you do sometimes see significant improvement. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with comfort in the system. In the case of LSU, it wasn't just, you know, comfort as far as just, you know, being around the program and teammates and comfort there, but they actually put in a new system, and that probably contributed a good deal to it as well. So exactly where Adrian would fall in all of that, I don't know, but certainly you would think that he's only going to be better from what he was a year ago, and you know, the quarterback is just such a huge part of an offense that if he's better, you would think the offense would have a chance to be a good bit better as well.
ESPN College Football Insider Brad Edwards is joining us on Hail Varsity Radio. And Brad, I agree in that I think Adrian is going to have a bounce back better year this year. But one thing that's not better for the Huskers is their schedule. In a 5-week stretch, they play at Ohio State versus Penn State at home, at Iowa, at Wisconsin, and they host Minnesota. Just in terms of brutal schedule, I mean, stretches, how brutal is that?
Yeah, you know, that's the question that I can answer a little bit better, at least a little bit better with, as far as putting some perspective on it, when we come out with the next version of FPI, because one of the things that we can run, and we often do this, is looking around the country at, you know, what are the toughest 3-game stretches, 4-game stretches, 5-game stretches, and that one sounds like one that would definitely be up there. I mean, that is brutal, and that's scary. You know, if you're a fan of a team that has to face that gauntlet, and you know, I mean, let's be honest, how many times in the last 5 years, maybe even more than that, has Nebraska beaten a team like the ones that you just mentioned? You know, I mean, home or road. How many games against teams like that have they won?
They beat Sparty. They beat playoff Sparty in 15, and that's it, brother.
Yeah, so that's what's scary, is because given what Nebraska's recent track record is, it's very easy to look at that and say, we could go 0-5, you know, and you might be playing that game of, if we can just win one of those, if we can go 1-4, and that, you know, that puts a damper on a season in a hurry. I mean, hopefully your coaches and your team aren't looking at it from that perspective. maybe they're taking it one game at a time, like they always talk about, and they haven't looked that far ahead. But yeah, I mean, when you're sitting there looking at a stretch where you've got that, if you don't win at least one of those games, you're going to have your work cut out for you just to be bowl eligible. So that's tough. And look, it places a lot of importance, you know, on those games that you look at right now and you say you're supposed to win, because you go drop one of those, and with the rest of that coming later, man, that'll really put you in a major hole before the season's, you know, hardly gotten going.
Brad, I think Nebraska fans are upside down with finding a game that you're supposed to win. With some fans, that's even in doubt, because you've misstepped on even some non-power five teams.
Yeah.
I've got about 90 seconds left. I want your thoughts, and I don't know if you can give us the secret sauce when it comes to determining point spreads or win percentage, but with the FPI different phases, you have the initial come out this time of year, and then you look at schedules, and then we'll get to the summertime and you'll have percentages. And I looked at the win percentages you guys put up for Minnesota, and you've been accurate. FPI has been accurate with win total win projection, 7-5, 6-6 versus ranking. And the win projection has usually been on point with a lot of programs. How do you guys get into establishing an early point spread and then a win probability?
Yeah, so the FPI ranking is based on a rating.
Okay.
And the rating is how many points above or below an average FBS team you're deemed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, I mean, just pretty simply, the gap between the teams in points is pretty much what the point spread would be according to FPI on a neutral field. Now, of course, then you start to adjust a little bit, 2.5 to 3 points for home field advantage, depending on where the game is, and that's one way to get. I don't know if the current version of FPI has posted the points. I have them, but I don't know if they're up there on .com yet.
Sure, I don't think they are,
but. But yeah, but once you can see the points column, then you get an idea for how much of a gap FPI believes there is between, you know, you and the opponent in a given game. And then the winning percentage, percent chance to win, is based off of that. And then there are, like, I think it's 20,000 simulations that we run every single day of the season based on those winning percentages for each game. And it basically, you know, it spits out a projected win total. And of course, it's never like 7-5. It's like, you know, it's 7.3 and, you know, whatever it may be. And it also factors in the number of times that you've reached the conference championship game, et cetera. So it ends up being fairly complicated, but it's all based on that points column.
Brad, awesome to chat with you. We'll do this again. Thanks for your insight today.
Always a pleasure. I just love talking college football in February whenever I get an excuse.
I love it, man. Take care, Brad. Appreciate you.
All right. See you, Chris.
Early to Rise with Hale Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Art Kranick.
Good stuff from Brad Edwards as he went over some of the FPI, his thoughts on Nebraska, and spring ball will crank up here soon enough. Went over some Husker baseball. Chris Schmidt and Damon Barr with you, weekend edition. Hale Varsity Radio and Brandon Vogel. He'll check in here shortly. And we'll also hear from Gary Sharp. We are efforting Mr. Kranak, see if that actually happens, and move on forward. Should be pretty pleasant today. We know what Greg Smith's doing. Greg Smith is keeping his ear to recruiting and no doubt firing the grill up. Got pretty big-time basketball today. Baylor and Kansas get going at around 11, you have Arizona and Oregon tonight. That'll be a monster showdown. And then BYU hosts Gonzaga. And that could shape some things. A full schedule of Big Ten play in action. One of the topics we got into this morning was kind of that most memorable sports moment you have. And it's in reference to the Miracle on Ice, the 40th anniversary is today. Kranak, I went back to the Fiesta Bowl and remember Frazier's iconic run as an event I was at that's iconic, that's burned into your memory. You and I were pretty young, but we've seen the footage and remember the broadcast call from Al Michaels with the Miracle on Ice. You've got a sports moment that you won't forget. You were at a lot of the bowl games for Nebraska as well.
Yeah, you know, Nebraska, Michigan, 2018. I'm just kidding. That would not be one of them. I'd probably have to go back to the Nebraska Florida State Bowl game in 93.
Okay.
I guess technically it was 94 because it was January 1st of 94. But the one that set up everything else.
Yep.
It would have to be that. I don't know if I've ever been more engaged for an entire game than that one. Right? Because up to that point, Nebraska could not compete really with the Florida teams. They just, you know, they sort of got ran off the field with speed.
You'd have a great regular season, and then it just got a little too difficult to maintain.
Yeah, you got Tamrick Vanovered. You know, you get
Charlie
shut
Ward.
Out. The speed was too much, and Nebraska couldn't deal with it. I mean, that's basically what it was from the late 80s to the early 90s, and that was the first game, and they had Charlie Ward, who was still, I think he's the best college quarterback maybe I've seen. Put aside Frazier and all that. But he was a threat, dude.
He was awesome. He was absolutely awesome.
Such a threat. He didn't get sacked all year.
Trev Alberts got him three times.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And then here comes Nebraska, and then Nebraska gets him down three. Think about that. The dude did not get sacked all year, and they threw the ball.
No, they had that shotgun offense, man, that fast break offense.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I was engaged that entire, like, every snap.
Did you have a good feeling going in, or were you kind of like, here we go again?
No.
Because the line was 17.5, and it was the national title game.
Exactly. Everybody going into it's like, oh, crap, here comes one of the Florida teams. Like, you didn't know. And it's Charlie Ward. You're like, You didn't. Oh yeah. No, you did not think that that was going to go well for you, that game. And then they, you know, time kept ticking, and they were still in it the whole time.
You know, the
it
best,
set up everything. It best, set up the entire run that we're so nostalgic about now.
The best quarterback. You know, Frazier's in the class by himself. I think you're right on that. The Charlie Ward was incredible. I think Vince Young. I just saw him once against Nebraska's, I think it was 03 team, where I think they beat Nebraska 31-7 or something like that, 31-10. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
Vince did his thing running the ball and throwing the ball. I always liked Donovan McNabb. I know he almost came to Nebraska. He was fun at Syracuse just because of how he could run and throw it. God, this is probably sacrilegious to say, but a quarterback I absolutely loved watching.
Don't say Holloway.
No, not Jamel. Okay. I like Jamel's beaver coat, though, that Barry tells us about. That he
Hagan.
Let him borrow. Hagan was great, but Michael Bishop from Kansas State.
Yeah.
That guy was awesome. Running the ball, throwing the football, and he was electric. But Hagan wasn't a great thrower all the time, but he'd always hit the big throws.
Mm-hmm. But do you remember after the 93 game,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of back to why, you know, we're biggest talking moments, sporting yeah. events, like you realized at that game, what was unfolding before you was Nebraska finding its footing among the elite.
Nebraska can like now hang.
You knew it, and you knew it was unfolding before your eyes. And then you were thinking ahead. You're thinking ahead. You're like, well, Tommy's back next year. Wow, so is that guy and that guy and that. Oh,
like, well, it was realizing beyond, like, the, beyond the quarterback thing, too. You're like, okay, Uncle Charlie's got a defense that's fast and can go kill people now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, like this whole this experiment is working. The whole reason you did that,
yeah.
And that was regularly written about, like, that was in the articles all the time. Was about how Nebraska is making their safeties linebackers and their linebackers rush ends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're like, and you're doing it to put more speed on the field. And of course, everybody's response is, well, I mean, that's good and all, but you're sacrificing some size. Like, whew, is that going
to
work?
Do you have the mentality to stop the run, right?
Yeah, you didn't know if it was going to work. And the Big Eight was kind of weak around then, so you didn't really know.
I don't think it was weak, but Nebraska raised a notch with their reinvention defensively, and you got the quarterback to lead you to the promised land, and you'd always had a great offensive line.
Well, you knew Colorado was good. K-State, fairly good. Kansas on the rise. Everybody else was pretty terrible. Well, yeah. Oklahoma wasn't even good.
OU was down. Okie State was down. Yeah. Missouri was bad, yeah. But... Yeah,
you didn't know. You didn't know if this experiment would work, and then you saw it working against the Seminoles.
Brandon Vogel's coming up, hour two on the way.
Presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, Roll Tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Hour 2, Weekend Edition, back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It's going to be gorgeous today in Lincoln. Can stream us ESPNLincoln.com. Get that grill fired up. I know Brandon Vogel will be doing so. Mark Kranak. Damon Barr. Damon, how much rum did you have last night?
Not enough.
Okay. There he has it.
Never enough.
It is wrong to drink Jobu's rum. We may need a live chicken for some blown leads for Nebraska baseball, but it's early in the season. Mark Kranak, follow him on Twitter at Mark Skurz. Chris Schmidt, @Schmidt_radio. Managing editor from Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Subscribe, get your digital and your magazine subscription at a obscenely low price point. 855-3-HUSKER, HailVarsity.com/subscribe. We welcome in Brandon Vogel to get us kicked off. Vogues, how was your Friday?
Oh, not too bad. Pretty uneventful until started following that Nebraska baseball game a little bit, and got eventful after that.
It did. Now, after the baseball game concluded, did you throw on the movie Miracle, knowing today's the 40th anniversary?
I didn't. I should have done that. It would have been nice to see someone win against the odds instead of lose against the odds. But so it goes.
Well, I got you. There's a lot to get into between Husker baseball. Hoops is going on, and they're trying to fight their way out of a tailspin. And it's been pretty quiet for Nebraska football, but I want to start with the offensive line, and we'll get into some of your FPI work and the research you did this week. As far as a group goes, if you were to put a confidence ranking out there, again, the preface of this is we're not hyping, we're just talking. But do you feel better about that O-line group going in with the options, with the depth? You've got 17 guys on scholarship. You've got a guy like Corcoran that is a focal point and a highly coveted prospect. I like Greg Austin. I think he's a tough dude. I think the O-line can put a lot on their backs moving forward. And is this a unit you're bullish on here for 2020?
Yeah, I think I would say cautiously, confidence scale of 10, I'd probably be at a 6.5 or 7.
Sure.
And maybe that, I think you can take, so Nebraska brings back everybody. You can kind of take that group of five and lock them away and be like, okay, if that's what you got, you'd expect some progression in their second year together. I think Cam Jurgens is still just kind of scratching the surface of what he can be. And you saw a little towards the end, his progress from the first couple of weeks of the season. So that's all good. Then you've got, I think, competition behind that, particularly with a guy like Bryce Benhart, obviously high expectations for him. Turner Corcoran, it's super tough to do that as a true freshman, but also super high expectations for him. So the next phase for, I guess, this offensive line group is, well, we'll see how that competition kind of plays out in the offseason. But then can they get to that depth where it looks like they have it on paper, but does it look like it on the field, where they're able to roll some guys in and out and have no noticeable drop-off? I think that's where they want to be. And I'm not comfortable saying they're going to have that. They've got the potential to have it. And I think having all of your guys back really opens up some opportunities for you. So, yeah, I think it's a pretty positive outlook on the offensive line.
Brandon Vogel is with us on Hail Varsity Radio. And over time, from the research that you've done, and Bill Connolly's done a lot of it, but you've analyzed that research as well as anybody. When you look at returning production, that really matters, even if that returning production wasn't necessarily productive. Is that a good way of looking at it?
Yeah, for the most part, it just matters to bring guys back who played together the year before. And it's been kind of interesting, so I've been like Bill Connolly does amazing work. I've been following these kind of returning production things for the past 3-4 years. And he always kind of updates the correlation, like, okay, you have X amount back. How much does it matter to how good those teams end up being? And receiving / passing yards has always been at the top. Like, continuity in passing game matters a ton. What's been interesting is kind of just looking at the percentages, offensive line starts, which is it's tough to quantify offensive line play in general, but it keeps creeping up a little bit, and the rushing yards kind of keep falling. And I think that's a little bit evolution of the game. It's more of a passing game now, but yeah. Bringing those guys back, particularly that much returning experience on the offensive line, is unique. And when you start to kind of understand this returning production approach, it's part of FPI too. You get these rhythms of where when a team kind of has to strike or make a move, because inevitably you're going to follow that up with, you're just going to lose a bunch of production one of these years. And this is Nebraska's time to kind of make that move.
Vogues, it is that time, and the next phase we heard Brad Edwards talk about is the schedule. Where are you at now with the schedule? Fearful, or all right, let's see how much better they get at different points in the year. And yeah, it's a big ass challenge, but that said, that's why you play the game, right? So it is a daunting finish, but it's a finish you're asked to complete in the Big Ten and in a lot of other conferences. The Big Ten's pretty sadistic about it, though, how they ask their teams to close. So I look at it as, yeah, it's daunting, but you should, as a program where you want to be able at some point close out 3-2, 4-1, and that isn't this year probably, but you get my point. That's what you got to go through. Other Nebraska teams have done it.
Yeah, they have, and other Big Ten teams have done it. And, you know, the overall quality of play in the league has risen, particularly of late. And to end up in Indianapolis, you're going to have to be really good and win some tough, close games. And that's what Nebraska is looking at. Schedule for me, I can't help but look at it and kind of go, yeah, that looks pretty tough. Like, we know Ohio State's not going to be 3-3 when Nebraska goes in there. Mm. But, you know, you look at games like Indiana last year. At this point last season or last year, that one was one you just kind of penciled in. That's a win for Nebraska. You know, it wasn't one you thought much about. So these things can be fluid. You know, the thing that jumps out to me about the schedule, as much as the last five games, including back-to-back road games at Iowa and Wisconsin, is the high stakes for this Purdue game to open the season. You look at two programs that have a ton of returning production on offense, play each other right out of the gate. And high stakes for Purdue. I think they host Memphis the next week, and then there's another game. I can't remember their third game, but it's not easy either. So Purdue's looking like if they don't win that, maybe 0-3 start. And Nebraska has yet to beat Purdue with Frost here, so kind of a big one there too. So it really starts right out of the gate, even though that's not one of the games that you point to and go, man, that's going to be tough.
Yeah, and Purdue, just looking it up, they have Air Force the week after that. So you talk about contrasting styles that they have to get ready for. Back to back to back, that's not going to be easy for them. Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity Radio. And you continue looking at the schedule. So it's not only Purdue. So you have this high stakes divisional conference game to kick everything off. And then you have Cincinnati, you have Central Michigan. And Cincinnati, to anybody that's not paying attention, is really good right now. They're probably at their peak as a football program in their entire history, like as we speak. It's a team that's won 11 games 2 years in a row, and they're coming into town. So what's interesting about this, Brandon, and I'm curious if you think Scott Frost and the staff will sort of get the benefit of the doubt. Can you see a scenario where Nebraska improves quite a bit, but it doesn't show up in the wins and loss column, and people are still good with it? Does that make sense?
I think you would barely kind of squeak over the line there. So if we look at this and kind of using the SP plus numbers, I estimated win probabilities and from that win totals, et cetera, you're looking at a little over 7. And if Nebraska goes 7-5 against this schedule, I think that's okay. But, you know, getting to 7-5 or getting to any number, there's always like one or two games there that could go either way. So if you end up on the wrong side of those, which Nebraska has a lot lately, it might be 6-6. And then that becomes tough. Then you're 4 wins, 5 wins, 6 wins. And no one's really going to care. You know, you have to look pretty hard at how difficult those schedules were to have that be satisfying and add up. So I do think that, you know, getting to 7 or something like that is pretty important, and it's tough. You mentioned Cincinnati. Really, their entire non-conference schedule, it's not the sort that makes you sit up and go, man, you can get really worried, maybe besides Cincinnati. But when I was trying to just, like, guesstimate a line against an FCS team, I wouldn't be surprised if Nebraska is about 14 or 15-point favorites against South Dakota State. it'll be a bigger favorite against probably Illinois and certainly Rutgers than it is in that game. Central Michigan played for a conference championship. Yeah. So it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. And Brandon, what's another thing that's kind of interesting about this too, especially when you look at projected totals, whether it be FBI or FPI or some of the stuff that Bill Connolly puts together, is that stuff assumes that your snap is going to get to the quarterback, right? Like, you know what I mean? There's nothing built in to account for, yeah, you're going to have a center with wayward snap issues for half the year and a running back that flakes out and decides to quit the team. Like, none of that stuff factors in. It also factors in that you have a decent, you know, you can kick field goals inside 30 yards. And you you know what I mean? How much of this, as we hem and haw and try to figure out Nebraska, how much of last year was kind of an unbelievable combination of, I don't know if you call it luck. I don't know what you would call bad luck. But there were some very odd outlier situations that Nebraska dealt with all year. And if those things were just normal, does Nebraska have a 7-5 or an 8-4 record last year?
Yeah, I think they're pretty close. You may not even have to wave the magic wand over too many of those things to get to 7. Now this is how it is for every team in the country, and how much you obsess over it probably tells you how that team did. But there's always a handful of games that it's just, hey, one or two things different, and it goes the other way. But with Nebraska, you know, you're talking about just even getting one more, getting to 6 wins and getting to a bowl game totally changes the tenor of the conversation this offseason. And maybe for good or bad, I don't know. Maybe it's not the thing to kind of get one of those coin flip games and people think then things are better than they are. I don't know which side of the line you want to be on there, but last year was strange. You know, in terms of SP Plus for these preseason rankings, it basically, special teams is baked into both sides of the ball a little bit, but it basically assumes average special teams for everybody. Like, that'll, you know, kind of sort itself out. So for Nebraska to rank 122nd or whatever they were in SP Plus special teams last year, it was about worth almost three points taken off of Nebraska's ultimate power rating. So those are the kind of things that aren't necessarily in these rankings right now. They may be in FPI, but SP Plus, they aren't. And that is one of those things, like, even if your starting kicker goes down, you think you'd have somebody available. Nebraska tried 4 or 5 guys. That is certainly unique.
Got to settle on somebody to go execute. And the last part of this, with wins and coin flip games, it comes down to coaching and then player execution. And the addition of a guy like Lubick, when it comes to helping with second half adjustments offensively and then going out and doing. I mean, Nebraska, too many times they'd respond, but maybe the defense wouldn't respond, or the defense would respond, but the offense wouldn't respond. The management, be it time management, personnel management, the coaching aspect of things, they got to get better from a game management standpoint, because you're going to likely have, again, Brandon, a lot of close games if things go well.
Yeah, it seems kind of unavoidable with this schedule. And once you get into Big Ten play or any conference play, the likelihood of that goes up. I mean, you look at even a game like Northwestern and what those games have been like traditionally between those two. Not one that jumps out to you on this kind of murderer's row of a schedule that Nebraska has, but that's one of those games where, yeah, you might need to win a 4-point game. You probably will, because that's usually how it goes between those two. So I think Lubick could potentially help a little bit with that if it's just streamlining that process offensively, because, you know, we've seen some of the procedural things that, you know, Scott Frost mentioned when announcing that Lubick hire, kind of the big red flag slash fix it item from 2019 was obviously the red zone and kind of converting scoring opportunities, which I think could be kind of, you got to be better in the red zone, point blank. But you know, this offense also is built around getting big plays, and they didn't have enough of those, particularly in the run game. So kind of scoring from farther out, and Lubick gets a pretty good situation, I think, to step into in that, A, he's familiar with the offense, and it's in a year where the offense brings almost everything back, including a third-year starter quarterback. So I think the ceiling is pretty high for that group, but got to see it. And so far, they just haven't been able to put it all together consistently enough.
Yeah, and you just said it, got to see it. That seems to be the collective thought of Husker Nation right about now. Are you seeing that in terms of, you know, working at a magazine and posting a website and all the social media accounts, Brandon, you see all kinds of fan feedback. Has it died down a little bit? You know, like, just because it's almost like fans right now are almost immune to the hype or just sort of like, whatever. You have to see it. Have you seen a different tenor from fans overall?
Yeah, definitely. And it has, you know, when that kind of initial top 25 ranking came out, it was all right, battle lines draw. I am either like, okay, I'm going to treat this like every other offseason, be kind of interested, maybe even a little excited about this, or the dupe was the faction that was just like, nope, not interested, don't want it, don't want to hear about it. We'll check out the spring game and see what happens there, and then probably wait again until fall. And I get that kind of coming from where Nebraska's been the past 2 years. So it has been interesting in that regard. And I think I approach it from I spend a lot of time kind of in these numbers and looking at these numbers. I kind of look at it as, well, if the progress isn't there on the field, here is a way to kind of show it. Like, Nebraska has been better in preseason FPI and FP+. Each year under Frost, like, and I know it's worth nothing in terms of wins and losses on the field. Like, you're still waiting for those things. But the way a lot of these power rankings are built is if you consistently score high, if you do the things that indicate, hey, you have a chance to be pretty good, or you have a chance to be better than last year, eventually things even out, and you should be that. So I kind of look at the positive part of it, but yeah, there are some people who are just saying, nope, no thanks. I'll see you at the spring game, and we'll go from there.
Wait and see is very popular. I can't wait to see the new issue of Hail Varsity. Give us a preview, Vogues, what folks can pick up and read or subscribe to.
Yeah, so the February issue just hit a couple of days ago. Good issue. Derek profiled a Husker superfan that if you've been to a live Huskers event and almost any sport, you've definitely seen over the years. So I won't spoil it or give it away, but it's a really good read from Derek. Mike Babcock kind of added something new to the George Flippin story. He was, you know, Nebraska's first black football player and really one of the first at a major college in the country in the late 1890s. There's been some controversy around one of his captaincies. And of course, Mike was the guy was able to dig into it and figure out a little bit what was going on. And then Greg Smith, in terms of features, also provided a really good long-term look ahead for 2021 recruiting, which is really getting underway in a big way right now. So a lot of good stuff in there.
Vogues, have yourself a weekend. Thanks for the time today.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
It's managing editor Brandon Vogel from HailVarsityMagazine.com. And his book with John Cook, Dream Like a Champion. Give Vogues a follow at Brandon L. Vogel. A timeout weekend edition of Hail Varsity rolls forward. Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse, is next. Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Now back with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranach.
It's 8:30 straight up. Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery weekend edition. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranach, Damon Barr. We welcome in the Iron Horse. It is Gary Sharp. Sharpie, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Schmitty. Welcome back.
Yes. Yes, that's about right, man. Missed you the last couple of weekends, and good to hear from you. And before we launch into some baseball and some football thoughts. You're a big hockey guy. I've known your coverage of hockey for many years, the 40th anniversary, Miracle on Ice. Is there a sporting moment that is seared into your mind that is iconic for America? Yes, but one you've covered or been at as a fan. Kranak was talking about the 94 Orange Bowl. I went to the Fiesta Bowl with Frazier's run. That's something I witnessed. And is there a sports moment on today's anniversary that always sits with you? Maybe it's one earlier this month for you. I don't know.
Well, the two world championships that I've seen recently between the Cubs and the Chiefs, I was young when Miracle on Ice happened, but I think that's probably the most iconic moment in U.S. sports history, just because of all the surroundings of it. It was tape delayed. You had Al Michaels and the famous line, but Al Michaels was only doing hockey because he was the only one on the ABC broadcast that had done hockey before. What it meant to this country and how much of an upset. It might be one of the greatest upsets in the history of sports, regardless of what sport. I would say being in Tempe when the 95 Nebraska team won the national title, I would say that because I had a front row seat to that entire season and how dominant a football team they were. But in that game against a really, 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 really good Florida team, how much they dominated them, I guess that would probably be my moment outside of my professional sports fandom.
Gary Sharp is with us on Hail Varsity Radio, and we were just talking to Chris Schmidt. Schmidt. You know why? Because he hosts the show. yes, we were talking to him. We were talking to Brandon Vogel about just general tenor of the fans. You host a daily show. You interact with it all the time as well. Of course, Chris does too. I'm just seeing, what are you seeing from fans as it relates to Nebraska football, as it compares to years past in terms of tolerance for hype?
Well, I think it's shifted where it's I'll wait and see. Guarded optimism, I would call it. My problem with this whole thing is when somebody releases something that is just purely factual about what Nebraska has coming back, that's on you, the consumer, how you want to consume it. I don't get being upset or mad because somebody is saying something positive about Nebraska. Now, let's remember, it was probably 3-4 years ago that people were upset because no one was talking about Nebraska. And, hey, we've gotten to the point where, you know, you gotta see something before you'll believe it, and that's perfectly fine. I'm a guarded, optimistic person. But I love college football, and I love covering Nebraska, and I love talking about it, and we're going to talk about it. You guys are in a business to make money. I'm in a business to make money. It's what drives this state. So you can consume it however you want. You can be mad. You could ignore it. You could wait until September 5th. But trust me, if Nebraska goes through spring football and number two looks pretty good, what's going to happen? People will get excited, and it's okay to be excited. Or just wait until September 5th. But I think it has really shifted to some guarded optimism and still unsure. But I contend, guys, I brought this up to you guys about a month ago, well, probably less than a month. This program is better today than they were when they walked off the field against Iowa. Now they just need some efficiency, game day coaching, game day success, and that will prove the point.
You nailed it. They need it to happen. They've put themselves in position a lot of times. It's time to finish it out, and that could be a late drive by the offense against Purdue. That could be a defensive stop against Cincinnati. That could be a breakthrough road win. And let's not kid ourselves. It's been a long, strange couple of years. But Nebraska's had moments in this short window where they've been in position to pull off some pretty big road upsets or wins, and relatively early in the Frost tenure. And then it's just been odd with where you think you're a couple of steps ahead and then you take a couple of steps back. And but I think you nailed it, the game day part, and we'll see how that is streamlined with Lubach. And Lubeck, and of course, what Nebraska can accomplish on special teams. Sharpie, is there a spot, and I asked Vogel this, I asked him about the offensive line, is there a position group that you're you're feeling probably best about on the team? I know this is a blind leap of faith here because we've seen nothing, but based on what is back, what you've consumed, what you know, and who you're able to communicate with just your contacts, is there a position group you're kind of in on more so than maybe years past?
Definitely defensive backs. I think that's a group that not only has a stacked room, I think they got a heck of a position coach who's got a great feel for his guys. And you basically, in a, so to speak, recruiting pickup, you got Deontay Williams back, which not only helps on the field, but off the field. And while he was away, some young guys were forced into playing more, and they grew. I really like the defensive backs. Now, I think Nebraska offensively, on the offensive line, I mean, they got 92% of the contributors that are coming back. Now it's time to put it all together. I mean, we talked all last season, or all during the season, Nebraska offensively can score some points. It's just about the efficiency in making winning plays. I also like the offensive line. I think the offensive line will move forward as a group. After that, there's some intrigue on the offense, but there's some guys that got to prove themselves, and there's some areas where you don't have a lot of depth. But I would go offensive line, defensive backs, and I think my biggest concern going into this year won't be the quarterback, won't be the running back depth, won't be wide receivers that are somewhat new, or the tight end position. I think, guys, it's going to be the front seven. I think that's something we'll talk about between now and the start of the season. And that could come down to if Nebraska is a six-win team, a seven-win team, or could get to eight wins, or how that front seven develops and how they play during the course of a 12-game season.
Man, yeah. Well, you went there. Let's open that conversation. The front seven and the 3-4. And, you know, we've seen the 3-4 now for 3 years in Lincoln. It's never come close to meeting black shirt standards, either of those 3 years. Is this the scheme or the alignment that's going to take Nebraska to the promised land? Or do we bring back the 4-3?
Well, do you think, and I'll ask you this, Mark, before I answer, do you think that there's a 4-3 element in this defense this year?
I hope.
Yes, it's technically a 3-4, but I don't think Chenander's married to the true 3-4 that we've seen elements of the 4-3, that could maybe benefit the personnel they have. My question with the front seven is, and again, I think the linebackers made strides, whether it be a Honus or a Miller. I mean, I think you saw some promising things in there. I just need to see more during the spring where they're making a lot of winning plays. If Nebraska still can't get anybody to get off the edge and go get the quarterback, you're still going to have issues. Now, does that change with Mike Dawson coaching that position? Mm-hmm. Are those guys going to be better technically? But I don't think Chenander's completely married to the 3-4. I think what he's married to is his defense has got to make more winning plays, and they can't get gashed up front like they did last year. But boy, there's some guys that you're just waiting for and saying, please have a good spring. Please have a good spring. Make some strides that we can trust you in the fall. Because there's a lot of those guys that are sitting on your defensive line that you need to have good springs.
Sharpie, you nailed it because you lose a lot production-wise on that front three or maybe elements of a front four. But I'm glad to hear that you can be a little bit multiple with what you want to do defensively. And, you know, we talk recruiting a lot, and you got a couple of prospects across the river in Bowlers and Fedoni, and you're in a race right now with the two teams you're chasing in the West that, by the way, do linebacker pretty well at Wisconsin, by the way, do tight end pretty well at Iowa, and you're constantly trying to get those type of guys to help your system. And with the linebacker room, it can be advantageous if you do have that guy off the edge in a 3-4. But the thing that's made Wisconsin so good is their ability to, yeah, they're a 3-4, but they go with an even front a lot of times. The ability to be multiple, that'd be nice to see, to your point, Nebraska maybe shift into that and be effective in it.
Yeah, and I think another part of it is those two guys that you mentioned and the two programs, Nebraska is now in a situation as they make their way into year number three, and the combine is coming up, and you'll have four guys that are at the combine. Nebraska needs to start getting a position that the NFL really likes. Mm-hmm. Could it be defensive backs? Will it be tight ends? You know, I think Nebraska needs to get into that next level where they've got a position group that continually just turns guys to the NFL. So when you look at Nebraska, you can go, yeah, that's DBU. That's tight end U. That's linebacker U. I mean, look at Ohio State. Ohio State's churning out defensive backs, first-round guys. You mentioned Iowa and what they do in Wisconsin. I think that's the next step in development when you tie Nebraska to the NFL and getting those kind of players coached up so they can go on to the next level, that you have a position group that just churns over and over like we saw in the days where Nebraska was not only having one position group, they were having multiple position groups, but you can also recruit to it. I go back. Now, you know, Nebraska made some missteps in the recruiting of Noah Fant. But what Iowa was able to do, and what Iowa's trying to do right now with Thomas Fedoni from Council Plus Lewis Central is, hey, look at the tight ends. Why don't you come into our facility? Let me show you this wall of guys that have played in the NFL or currently in the NFL from the tight end position and what we do with our tight ends. Have you seen what Nebraska does with the tight ends? That's what schools can do when they have a history of NFL guys. Nebraska hasn't had that, whether it be the 2 years of Frost or the 3 years of Riley. They need to start that so they can go even to a T.J. Bullers and say, hey, look at here. I know Alabama's hot on the trail, and you're getting all these offers. But look what we've been able to do with guys that look exactly like you and play like you. That guy is making millions in the NFL. We see you in that position in 3 years, maybe 4 years.
Gary Sharp is with us on Hale Varsity Radio. Gary, let's go straight at it. Let's go at the quarterback position. How does the quarterback position play out? Who starts? Who keeps his job the whole time or loses it? Loses it to who? Does Logan Smothers factor at all? Prognosticate for us. How does the quarterback position unfold?
Let's go the back way. Now, Logan Smothers is not going to come in here and be the starter. But I can't wait to see Logan Smothers this spring because I think Logan Smothers has a knack for playing quarterback. He kind of, you know, if you watch the brief film of Adrian Martinez in high school, you looked at him and go, man, there's a guy that's talented but got that kind of an it factor. Smothers, to me, has that it factor but is faster. And I can't wait for them to unleash him to see what he could do. But let's slide him out of the mix. I know, and I'm in the minority here, I truly believe that I am still in the Adrian Martinez camp because I not only feel that there's something there that was missing last year that will get corrected, but I'm listening to everything the head coach is saying, and that's his guy. They have stood by him. They have put him on a pedestal. They realize what went wrong last year, whether it be physically or mentally. It's their duty to fix it. Because they are not going to throw Adrian Martinez is going to get plenty of opportunities. Now, with that said, Adrian Martinez has to be better at simply playing quarterback. Now, does that mean physically he cures a lot of his ails of last year? He had surgery, shoulders better. Guys, I don't know if you've seen him lately in person or you've seen pictures on the internet. He is not as big as he was last year. I think that was a mistake that they thought, okay, being in the Big Ten, we're not very familiar with the Big Ten. We've gone through it once. Adrian got beat up. We've got to get him a little bit bigger so he can handle the pounding. Well, Adrian's body couldn't handle the pounding and being that big. Not overweight, but too much muscle down. He looks skinnier than he did last year. What does that mean for him in spring? Who knows? Does that help with his mind? He's got to be better at reading. He's got to be better at playing quarterback. But I think Nebraska will invest a lot of time and energy this spring into Adrian Martinez and say, it's still your job. But it's your job to lose, not somebody to come and get it. Now, with that said, you feel comfortable with a guy like Luke McCaffrey, who still also has to make strides in his development and has to get bigger. But I think it's all Adrian Martinez in the spring at quarterback. Because, guys, don't kid yourself, and maybe you can tell me I'm crazy, that if Adrian Martinez looks good in the spring, and I know it's spring football with what they do with quarterbacks and they put a jersey on them, but if Adrian Martinez looks a lot more confident in reads and making decisions and throwing the football, you're going to go, okay, here we go. I could see Nebraska being bowl eligible before they get to that Halloween contest in Columbus. Season can't get here soon enough. Why is it 27 Saturdays away today?
Look, I don't think anybody questions his athleticism, his competitiveness. Throwing beyond short range just hasn't worked, though. I think that's what makes people sort of
not all in on Adrian Martinez. You're absolutely right, Mark. And it's weird because I just happen to, you know, we all, late at night, we're laying in bed, and we go down the rabbit hole of YouTube. You guys thought I was going somewhere else. I watched highlights from the Colorado game, which was the first game I think of the freshman year of Martinez.
Yeah.
I've kind of wondered, you remember the deep ball he threw to Spielman in that game?
Yes.
Dropped it in a bucket.
Yeah.
I've kind of wondered where we've seen bits and pieces throughout the course of that remaining season or once or twice last year, where that went. And that was the first game that he played at Nebraska. Now, I also went down the rabbit hole. You go back to the Illinois game. There were some balls that he threw in that game that had to be in the tight windows that he was able to complete. So somewhere in between, there's the real Adrian Martinez. There's three guys that are paid really highly on the offensive staff. It's their job to go find that. But that pass to Spielman, I still keep thinking about, that couldn't have been an anomaly, right?
No. You wouldn't think. By the way, does Luke McCaffrey become a Taysom Hill? Without playing fullback, obviously.
You know what? So I was one of those guys when I saw him in high school and thinking that, you know, Martinez is here. Guy, you got to get McCaffrey on the field as much as possible. Could he be a wide receiver as well? Mark, I don't think that's crazy. I don't think that's crazy at all. If you have somebody that's talented like that, and we saw an experiment with it last year, then do it. But don't, like, tease it and then just don't do anything with it. If you're going to go there in that role, then you have to commit all in to benefiting the team with what McCaffrey brings to the table.
Sharpie, we'll get you out of here on this. Your assessment of Husker baseball so far. Love the offense, but a tough one last night. You jump up, you know, touchdown lead, and you can't hang on. Not saying panic. It's only four games in, but how does Will Bolt navigate the rest of this time in San Diego after another tough one on the heels of how the Baylor series went?
Yeah, I think they're more talented than what they should be right now. But, hey, we just kissed our sweetie hello for Valentine's Day. I'll start paying a lot of attention to the record when my grass starts to grow.
Sure.
With that said, there's no doubt this team is pretty good offensively. I mean, they will battle at the plate. They will force opposing pitchers in deep counts and a lot of pitch totals. But defensively right now, you know, you haven't had a ton of live ground balls outside. I'm gonna wait on that. The bullpen, though, and that looks to be an issue. And you can't have that. And Will said it perfectly last night. You can't score as many runs and get as many base hits as they have and lose games. And that's what happened last night. So we'll see how they bounce back. But, you know, I mean, we all want to go, oh, no, after what's happened around here with baseball for a while. But I still think they're fourth, fifth in the league. Boy, you'd love to have that one back last night, especially when you're up like that. You feel you got one of the better closers in the Big Ten on the mound. A slip leads to a run. And just one of those nights for Nebraska baseball. That's Big Ten baseball after dark, guys.
Last thought here, high school hoops. What a week in high school basketball in the Metro. And we have districts looming. You had Central with an impressive overtime win. Donovan's been on a tear for North Star here locally. Bell West is insane. I saw Westside last night. I had seen them, but it was about a year ago, and some of those juniors are now seniors, and some of those sophomores are now juniors. Westside's a damn good basketball team. Sharpie, this could be as good as a state tournament as we've had, and you could have some teams not get in that are real deserving. You've had a chance to see some of the Metro talent all year long. Your impressions as we're knocking on the door for districts.
Yeah, you know, all of us are about the same age, and all of us have either, you know, we've all covered high school basketball games before. You know, the run of the Woolridges and the Badgets that were in Omaha and some of the really good basketball talent in Lincoln, that's kind of what we're at. I mean, look at Miller North. Miller North financially is making a lot of people some money that are selling popcorn or selling programs or admissions to come watch them play. It seems like it's been five straight games that Miller North has played, but it's much more. Last night,
a thriller. Omaha Central probably doesn't get enough attention. You know, they win in overtime. You know, and Hunter Salas is Hunter Salas. I think Hunter Salas has played himself, guys, above a Nebraska and a Creighton. Yeah. The Blue Bloods are coming, and he's going to have an opportunity. I mean, he's going to be knocking on the door of being one of those one-and-done guys. If anybody has not seen him, if Miller North makes the state tournament, get there and watch him and his mates, because they're really, really good, and he is one of the best. The other one, Donovan Williams, the other night, saw that game. You know, Schmitty, you've seen Donovan Williams play enough. He's a scoring machine. How will his game move to the next level? Watch this development, though, and I know Donovan's getting a lot of attention. You know, he's been to Texas A&M. K-State has made him a priority. He's going to go visit Kansas. He is still in contact with Tim Miles, and Tim Miles is going to be working next year. It might be at a Mountain West school in Laramie, Wyoming, but don't be surprised if Tim Miles gets in the mix with Donovan Williams, because they still have a really, really good relationship.
Mm. Cowboy Salas, by the way, if you haven't seen Hunter Salas, he can just get his own shot whenever he wants. Like, it's just, you know what I mean? Like, guard him wherever you want, however you want. He's going to shake you. He's going to get his shot.
Yeah, and he's such a good kid. He's got such a great bounce. You know, his shot's going to continue to develop. But when he puts the ball on the floor and he gets to the rim, there is no one stopping him, and his defense has gotten a lot better. We're in a really good moment in the class of 2021. And we're not even mentioning Chucky Hepburn, who's going to Wisconsin.
Yeah, Chuck's good.
Look at this. In the city of Omaha, you have two of the most highly recruited and highly ranked players ever since they started doing rankings. Hunter Salas, a junior at Miller North playing basketball, and Avante Dickerson, the defensive back at Omaha Westside, who is a top 60 player in the class of 2021. It's an amazing run right now. And on the football side, it could really benefit Nebraska, because Teddy Prochazka at Elkhorn South is highly rated. Keegan Johnson is highly rated. I mean, Nebraska football, this could, in the 500-mile radius, there's a lot of highly rated prospects that have Nebraska on the radar or have already said yes to Nebraska.
Sharpie, have a great weekend, bud. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Take care. That's Gary Sharp with us. The Iron Horse covered it all. It's been a treat, man, to watch as much basketball as we've seen this year in the high school ranks. And can't wait for the state tournament, man. We'll be covering it here on ESPN Lincoln over on KFOR. And I can't put into words just the talent level you're seeing. I mean, well, you always see good talent, but this is mountaintop talent with highlight reel playmaking and just phenomenal games. I mean, heavyweight clashes.
We haven't even talked about, like, there's a kid on Miller North that's a sophomore that's committed to Stanford.
Yeah, I know.
They just don't even talk about him. And then Jason Green, their point guard.
Green's money.
Right? And I think in a normal year, he would be a celebrated and talked about guy.
Mm-hmm.
And because he will get Power 5 offers eventually here.
Well, he's you know? He's a big-time fit for what the mayor wants to do. I mean.
Right.
But yeah, that's
and he's like an afterthought. It's crazy.
That's a good nugget from Sharpie on Tim Miles in Wyoming. I mean,
right. Just go ahead and drop that in there. Yeah,
make that happen. Yeah, hey, it'll be all right. So podcast will be up hailvarsity.com and iTunes, and Damon will get that posted. He'll have some SoundCloud nuggets from Brandon Vogel and Gary Sharp. Kranak, what's on your schedule today?
It's going to be 60,000 degrees outside today, right? Something like that? I think you just have to get out, get some vitamin D.
A little vitamin D, sit out on the patio, turn the grill on.
Get the mankini out and just, you know, walk around town.
Just show off.
Why not?
Yeah, there's
Por qué no?
A lot of reasons not to, but... Back at it next Saturday for the weekend edition. Thanks for tuning in to Hail Varsity.